Okay, we're going to get into it right ahead. Sitting across from me in the Charity Charge studio, I have Phyllis Everett, who is the founder and CEO of Saffron Trust. And we have a lot to discuss, but sometimes when I get the guests in the studio and we're all excited, I go, let's just start recording right away. So I know, because I always think it's fun for me, kind of the give and take of how kind of the whole mutual aspect of what Charity Charge is doing, what your organization is doing, and the entire nonprofit community. You know, a lot of people have like kind of questions in general about us or like how this got started. And you were asking about our logo. And I always like to just, you know, recognize a really, really amazing woman named Laura Reese, who's in Atlanta, that early on when I had the concept for Charity Charge, she, long story short, was really gracious and took us on as a pro bono client. And she came up with the name Charity Charge and helped really guide the design of the logo itself. And we've obviously stayed good friends. She's been an advisor and a mentor to us over the past 4+ years. So this is an opportunity to acknowledge her, as much as when we get into it, this podcast will be about Phyllis, you and your work. So anyway, with all that being said, thank you to Laura, but now sitting across from me, Phyllis, thank you so much for being here.
Oh, thank you for having me, Stephen. I'm really excited.
You know, it's kind of cool how, first of all, let's give another shout out to Baron, Baron J and the Baron J Foundation, because he's a client of ours. They use our corporate card. He's out in Los Angeles.
Yes.
And it's really been a pleasure to get to know him and work with his foundation. And he connected us, which is also just kind of the beauty of why I'm loving doing what I'm doing. And, you know, more and more my appreciation for the difference between the nonprofit community in that world and the traditional corporate America. Yes. So it was really cool that Baron, you know, thought enough to put us in touch. And I know we chatted a couple of weeks ago, and here we are together. So
yeah,
it's really
shout
awesome.
Out to Baron. Thank you, Baron, so much. That was really cool that we connected this way.
Yeah, no, most definitely. You know, I think that you've shared with me, obviously, a bit about your work. And, you know, for people listening, I've had the luxury now and the ability to be able to interact with a lot of people, obviously in Austin, where we're headquartered, where we are today, but more nationally. Of course, we just mentioned, you know, wonderful people like Laura Reese, who's helped us out,
yeah.
You know, people like leaders of nonprofits out in Los Angeles, including Baron, like we just mentioned. But I've really, really been touched with the level of passion and enthusiasm that you shared with me about your work and what you're doing. And I really appreciate how also diligent you've been to help get me up to speed on the important work that you're doing.
Yes.
And I want to jump right into that. And I think what will be really interesting as well to share on this podcast, I always try to make it informational for the, you know, for the people listening along. I think a lot of people are in their early stages of getting a nonprofit organization off the ground and also trying to figure out how to scale it. And, you know, you have such a tenacity in trying to figure out how to just maximize what you're doing. So I think being able to ask you some questions, if you're okay with it, about how you're kind of seeing opportunities out there as the founder of a nonprofit would be great.
Okay, that's cool.
Yeah, you know, so Phyllis, I'm really for now going to give the floor to you, but can you tell us just a little bit about your work with founding Saffron Trust? And, you know, I know your background as a single mother gave you the insight to this. So, you know, what comes top of mind when I ask you about kind of the origin story and your own personal experience that gave you the passion to start this?
Well, Saffron Trust Women's Foundation, I didn't know it was even going to come about, but I guess when there's a passion that you have, God kind of ushers you right into it. And that's sort of what happened to me. I was here in Texas working for Dell, and I started to do a lot of research on the maternal mortality numbers here in Austin, Texas, and became really passionate about it and started to partner with other organizations to see what I can do. I was a program director of a women's healthcare clinic where I came across all the numbers of the maternal mortality and became really passionate about, again, what I could do to change those numbers and, you know, to help women become healthy and remove some of the barriers in their life. After I left the health clinic as a program director, I still wanted to continue on with my work. So I didn't really know a lot about maternal mortality. I'm not in the healthcare field, so I couldn't really have a conversation about that. But what I could have a conversation about was the stressors that mothers have, or women have in general, when raising kids. I was a single mom. I am a single mom. My children are grown now, but I raised three children in the Bronx, New York. And so resources were very important to me being a single mom. And if I didn't have the resources in the community that supported me, I do think that there would have been a different outcome for my children and also my life. So I became an expert on navigating the pillars of support that are necessary into raising children because of the community relationships that I had and the resources that were available to me that were far few and in between. So I really had to dig in order to get a lot of help raising my three children. And so I did raise my children. They're all educated. And then I wind up going to school after my children got grown, and I got my master's degree in organizational structure. So it became a marriage made in heaven with the education and then using the pillars of support, gaining resources for other women that may need those kind of services.
It's really unbelievable, you know, as you articulate all of that through and you've lived it, you know, and I think that it's really beautiful that not only did you live it, you're figuring out ways to obviously give back through what you've learned. We're tearing up over here. Actually, this would be the second time we've had you know, emotions run over here, but that's beautiful to say it.
Thank you so much.
I had interviewed Andra, who the founder of the Kindness Campaign, and she was brought to tears as she was sharing her story. And I think that, you know, emotions run deep, and I think that it's a beautiful thing, you know, when I can see it, because you can see the authenticity. I know a lot of people, everyone's listening in, but, you know, I'm sitting here sitting across the table from Phyllis. You know, talk to me a little bit about some of the practical challenges. I mean, I know you kind of talked about kind of the big picture of things can happen, stressors and such. Are there practical things that you would share to kind of educate people? Because this is where I'm coming at it. You know, I cannot put myself in your shoes. Mm. Literally, I can't. So can you share with me some of like the challenges that you had gone through personally in more detail, or if it's appropriate, or just in general, what you're seeing with the women that you're able to help?
Well, apparently Austin, Texas is one of the most economically diverse cities in the country.
This is crazy. Go on with it. I don't want to steal your thunder. I couldn't believe it when you were sharing these metrics.
Yeah, so, and so when we talk about that, then there are a lot of disparities with women in marginalized communities. And so housing and sustainability is very important. And so there is a large percentage of people, I don't really know the numbers, but I know I'm going to throw out maybe more than 40 to 50% of the people in Austin live a percentage or two above poverty. And so when we talk about that, and not necessarily individuals who are getting services, but people who are working a regular job just to pay the cost of living in housing, there's very few dollars left over sometimes. So food insufficiency is a big concern. Austin is a foodie-friendly city, but one in four families are food insecure. And so when we think about small things like food insecurity, there are also additional things if there is a single mom or a family, they could just be struggling with simple things like diaper needs or personal hygiene products. So what Saffron Trust does is we are in the boardrooms and we're with legislation changing policies and laws, but we're also in the community doing things on a daily basis to relieve the stresses. So the one thing I talk about is the allostatic load that came to a platform for me about 4 years ago when Dr. Charles A. Moody introduced me to what the allostatic load could predict and how it is. The higher the allostatic load, the more damage it is doing to our bodies.
Just zooming out for a sec too, to make it also relatable. I love that you're here as the expert with all of this, but a lot of what we're talking about are all these stressors and challenges are leading to an extremely high rate of death of mothers.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. I mean, so just, and now we're getting into some of the specifics of it, but I mean, these are the real challenges. And then a lot of the things you're talking about, I mean, you could just only imagine the repercussions, especially when it's, correct me if I'm wrong, but I mean, really where you're going and the opportunities to make a big difference, not only would you have someone in a single mothers, but on top of it, they have all these stressors. And if they're to pass away, all the repercussions that can create.
Oh, yeah. It's creating repercussions. It's creating as we sit here and talk about it, and repercussions that it can create. So I know, for instance, with me, I'm a perfect example. My children are all grown now, but when and I ate healthy, I drank a lot of water, but there were many stresses in my life being a mom, going to work, trying to make sure that my children, I was dealing with their emotional needs and making sure food was on the table and the car was maintained and just so many different stressors. And although I lived a very healthy life and I had a lot of activities, when I turned 40 years old, it might have been 35, I was rushed to the hospital because, and I wasn't overweight, and I was told that I had high blood pressure. Mm. And the doctor said, did you smoke? Is it hereditary? All those things didn't apply to me. But those stressors, that allostatic load is like the brakes never let up. And it's constantly, constantly weighing down on a family.
And I'll ask Grant to link to this because you have a really wonderful PDF. I mean, I'm looking at it right now that has a whole, I guess you could call it an infographic about allostatic load that you've put in your materials that that you prepared for this. So, you know, we'll link to that, but go ahead. You know, I think.
Yes. And so those stresses, so it was behind the scenes and I was in the hospital. They had to keep me overnight. My blood pressure was so high. And I didn't understand how I got high blood pressure. I didn't eat a lot of salt, no processed food. I hadn't eaten red meats in years, probably since I was 20. And here I was, and here I am now with high blood pressure. But those stressors and that high blood pressure eventually over time is like a drip of water in a bucket from maybe a leak in a roof. And the drop just keeps dropping, but eventually the bucket gets filled with water and it overflows and there's a lot of damage that's caused. And so all these different events that were taking place throughout my life, raising children alone and with a community of people and looking for resources eventually had a toll on me as I got older. And so I think about that all the time. I think about those stressors. And so the one thing that we don't do in our community, I'm African-American, is we don't really look for resources when it comes to dealing with a lot of emotional stress. We kind of hold it in. We don't really talk about it. So I highly encourage, and I'm an advocate for women really going to seek counseling, having life coaches, having a community of people that talk to you all the time so that there's an avenue to have an outlet so that you can be healthier. So I really, you know, those things that I used in my own life while I was raising my children, I definitely advocate in the work that I'm doing now with Saffron Trust Women's Foundation.
And, you know, it's really eye-opening for me. I really appreciate you spending the time to educate me and hopefully that, you know, everyone else that's listening and more we can spread this, the awareness about everything that you're doing and just in general, these challenges that are, that mothers are facing. I also think I mean, as I'm looking at this chart and hearing more about allostatic load, it all makes sense, but it's one of the first times that I've seen it graphically represented and just displayed in a way where the light bulb's going off in my head of just, I mean, what you're talking about and with all due respect, I think it's wonderful to have a focus of where Saffron Trust Women's Foundation is focused, but this would apply to anyone. You know what I mean?
Oh, absolutely.
You know, have all these different stressors of their life that kind of have this spillover effect.
Oh, yes, absolutely.
And speaking of that, one of the things, you know, we were talking about, I want to kind of dive into some of the details of some of the practical work that you're doing. But one of the things too, when you just also, we talk about it from just the pure like finances or economic side, you know, I think one of the things you had shared with me is just even having, you know, sometimes the grants that you're giving away to some of these women in need of support, all things considered to the quote average person is a relatively nominal amount of money. It might be $250 or $500, but that those funds are going towards something that they really need to pay for, whether it's their you know, electricity bill, or it's for food for the month. Because if they don't have those funds, it creates all these other kind of ripple effects. Are you following me? Can you talk a little about some of the practical ways that, like, a little dollar, you know, you've been able to get support, financial support, and then dole that out in relatively modest increments can make a huge impact.
Oh, yeah. As I mentioned in the beginning of the talk that we were having, sustainability is very important. Housing is very important. So if you have someone who just lives a percentage or two above poverty and they're making $600 a week, and that's only $1,200 a month, and your rent is $900. And so your whole check goes to that. And so if you're getting services, for instance, if you're getting assistance that may help you get over the hump, $250 for food stamps, but you're working, let's say at Walmart for $14 an hour, and then Walmart gives you a raise for $15 an hour, then you're no longer in that poverty level. Mm. And so then, you know, they remove your stamps. And so it's making a hardship for you as you move up the ladder. Mm-hmm. So it's almost like you're penalized because you're moving up the ladder, and it puts you back in a position that was worse than where you were. And so if you're not getting that support and you're not able to pay your rent, it's just a ripple effect. I think after the fifth, you get a notice. After the 15th, you can get an eviction notice. And after the 30th, you move out, and then that's on your credit. And so most people who are suffering from food insecurity usually come from homelessness first. So with Saffron Trust Women's Foundation, we try to reach the immediate needs. We want to know some of the things that they're faced with right now today. Something you can't wait for a grant that's coming from St. David in 6 months, or you can't wait for, you know, something that's going to be issued in another year. You need Pampers now. You need food now. You need, your son needs tutoring now. You need to get to the doctor now. Your teeth need to be fixed now. And so we have partnered with many different people within the community. So within the last year, we've built enormous relationships in the community with other resources that are doing things. So when a family comes to Saffron Trust Women's Foundation, 60% of the time we're able to meet that need, depending on what it is. We partnered with HEB and a couple of stores in Round Rock that are close to food deserts, mm-hmm. where women can go and get milk, because not only are they getting WIC for their baby's milk, but after children get a certain age, they're off those programs.
This is the Pour It Forward initiative.
Yeah, this is the Pour It Forward initiative. So we have many initiatives. We have Pour It Forward, which supports milk. We have partnered to the pantry, where we've partnered with food banks and we take mothers to the food bank. We have
Change from the bottom up.
Change from the bottom up. Yes, I really
like
that.
I got the cheat sheet in front of me. So it's really.
Yeah, we partnered with Austin Diaper Bank. Mm-hmm. We were able to.
They're a client of ours. We work with them. Yes, they're awesome. Yeah Holly over there.
Yes,
that's great.
Yes. Actually, I spoke with her the other day and she knows who you are.
That's wonderful. We know who they are. Yeah, no, we're really proud to be working with them.
They're doing some great work.
Well, yeah, and not to get on a tangent there, but it's really great to know that you're a part of that. I mean, it was eye-opening for me. I went with Abby, who works with us at Charity Charge as well. We went on a tour there.
Oh, yeah.
And it was when the first time that I really got to understand the purpose of a diaper pantry and really understand why, you know, in the sense of, you know, all basically the repercussions that happen. I mean, candidly,
diapers are not part of the U.S. anti-poverty program. So, you know, women are not getting diapers, and, you know, you have moms that are going into stores, you know, getting paper towels out the bathroom because they just don't have enough money to get diapers for their family. I mean, it's just dropping mm-hmm. and tear jerking.
How does that partnership work? Are they a partner to provide diapers to your nonprofit and your
The one thing about Saffron Trust, we really don't need to get any kudos for anything we do. So if there's an organization that's really out there helping the community, we'll partner with them and we'll be that other wing to do what they need to get done.
Got it.
Yeah, because they know the demographics of women need to be served. We don't really know all the women. We're really just getting familiar in the community. So if there's someone out there doing something, you know, go ahead and do it and let me just, you know, set off something in this part of town or, you know, to help, because they're giving the diapers to the demographics that we serve. And so we support them. We'll be doing another diaper drive with them this year. So, So Saffron Trust is not trying to reinvent the wheel, because there are organizations that are, you know, helping a lot of other people, but there needs to be more.
More, but I also think there needs to be, I mean, your personal experience when you started by sharing your story is that you've been able to figure out a way to connect all the dots, kind of that 360 degree view of everything that a single mother may need. And I think that that's the beauty of the collaboration that I'm seeing more and more in the nonprofit space and from yourself as a leader, is that, you know, as you're mentioning, like there's already the Austin Diaper Bank that's very specific and big mission, big role to play.
Oh yeah.
But specific about just doing that one aspect, you know, again, which is huge. And then you're connecting the dots to for people need diapers, they can go there. You know, you have the Port Forward Initiative through partnerships with HEB. I know you have the Meals for Moms. We talked about that as well on the phone.
I still have many Meals for Moms.
Is that through Jack Allen's or where did they fit into?
It's not through Jack Allen's. Jack Allen's helped me launch Trendsetting the Table.
Got it.
And Trendsetting the Table is sweeping up Austin. I don't have enough time to plan all the restaurants that really want to do this. When I first started Saffron Trust, I'm like, if there's a need, fill it. What's the need? Food. I go into a restaurant. Can you help me? What do you need? I need a meal for a mother. How many meals do you need? One could help a family, whatever your restaurant can do. And so everyone across, I mean, I started going up and down 35, and I have to tell you, every restaurant from Jack Allen's to Cheesecake Factory to Olive Garden. I mean, everybody was just very generous. And the other day, I got 10 meals the other day from Macaroni Grill in the mail. And so they'll give me meals for, you know, a family to eat. I mean, it's very difficult when you're living on a tight budget. I think about when I was raising my three children. I mean, if we didn't have family and friends, it would have been probably once a year that we were really able to go out to sit down at a fine food restaurant that had natural vegetables and, you know, grilled food. And so, I know how important that could be.
Mm-hmm.
And so, so I think when I present to restaurants what's going on in Austin, because like I said, it's jaw dropping. And when restaurants find out that one in four families are food insecure and they want to make a difference, mm-hmm. they don't hold back from me. They give me anything I want. I have the ability to, when I lay out the numbers and what's going on, people genuinely care. You just have to let them know. And so Meals for Mom just started just like that. I was in a restaurant and I was like, can I speak to the manager? And it was just that simple. And I just went up and down 35, collected meals. I got over about 150 meals, you know, for families to sit down and eat. I don't give them to women individually, but I partner with the organizations that serve the women that I'm passionate about.
Mm-hmm.
And so they can either go online and request a meal or a meal for a family or two meals or whatever. I partner with the Round Rock Police Department, who comes in contact with a lot of homeless women, believe it or not. I remember when I was sitting down with the community service liaison, and the officer told me, you wouldn't believe how many battered women and how many women we have to pay for a night at a hotel stay. And we have to pay for a meal that comes directly out of our pocket. So people are doing their part in general. But I think, you know, Saffron Trust has a real passion for this, and we could advocate to make a difference legislatively. You know, we could change policies. We could, you know, make people aware. The one thing you mentioned, Jack Allen's. I love Jack Allen's. I love Matt because I went in with the idea of Trendsetting the Table, and I'm from New York, so I talk really fast. And I sat down with him and I sketched out some stuff on a piece of paper. And he said, sure, I'll do it. You know, I said, you'll feed, you know, 40, 50 women. He said, yeah. I'll let you have the restaurant and you could do what you want. And I was like, are you kidding me? He goes, yeah. And so I was really nervous, and he put me in contact with his media team. And the first time, it took over 6 months because I had to get the media team. I had the Statesman involved. They did a really good article. I had a former employee from CNN come in and do videos. And so it took a lot of time to put together. But I partnered with Dr. Lisa Sumlin. She has a book called The Struggle is Real, and it's about healthy eating and a focus on diabetes when it comes to the women in our community and how to eat healthy. And she comes in during the meal seminar and she gives away her book to each of the women there. The restaurants offer the meals and they treat women like royalty. Jack Allen's, they allow the women to get anything they want from main course to dessert. And it was just to see the women who whisper to one another, you know, I hadn't eaten out in like 2 years. You know, I hadn't had a meal like this in like 3 years. You're like, you can't believe it. You drive up and down 35 and there's nothing but restaurants, but still families can't get in to have a meal. That's just startling.
Mm-hmm. It is
fresh vegetables, yeah. You know. And so, well, yeah. And so I like Jack Allen's because they didn't say, you know, we'll give you the meals that were left over. You can come in when the restaurant closed. And so I think when, you know, Jack Allen's did that trend setting the table and other restaurants. And when I go in and say, this is what we really want to do. And this is what Jack Allen's did. And we have a lot of media coverage from that day. And so then we did Papa Do's and they were just amazing. And then we did Hank's. Is it Berkman or Beekman Street in Austin? And it's just really wonderful. And restaurants are, you know, emailing Saffron Trust all the time, you know, but we need volunteers to get the word out. We need a little bit more funding to make visibility and that kind of stuff. But also shout out to Mia Greer for C2H, because her and Dr. Sumlin come in. It's a whole team of us, the three of us, who do a meal educational seminar. So it's pretty cool.
And with all of this stuff being said, there's a couple things I want to get to because it's really moving. I know you're talking about all of the day-to-day struggles and then the day-to-day programs that you've created, you know, whether it's Pour It Forward or Change from the Bottom Up, Trend Setting the Table, Meals for Moms, Partner to the Pantry, Passion Packing, Heart for the Hearts, Grace Overnight, and a couple of others.
Mm-hmm.
What is the, you mentioned though something about policy, you mentioned, you know, what do you think needs to change systemically so that maybe we live in a completely different world in 5 years, 10 years, 20 years, 25 years? What maybe is something that, like, if you can wave a magic wand, would happen? Because one of the things that I am hearing, which is really great, is that you're finding people, whether the owners of restaurants or other, you know, organizations like Austin Diaper Bank are out there playing a role, but how do we even get ahead of the problem in the first place?
I believe the funding within the city of Austin needs to go to the grassroots nonprofits because they're the ones in the living rooms. They're the ones who are, you know, with the parents through mm-hmm. the struggle. They know the dynamics of the struggle and they could speak to it like no other.
Mm-hmm.
I think when a lot of the funding goes to the bigger organizations, they spend a lot of times in meetings and boardrooms
mm-hmm.
and they could, you know, get $500,000. And then for a year, it's just gathering data. There's no real funding that's going into the community. There's not a meal that's going on a table. Gentrification is going on. People are being moved from where they lived at. You know, they're in.
That's
food.
What I love about you is yeah. you're hustling and making it happen.
Oh, I hustle.
Yeah. I mean, like no other. I mean, really.
Oh, yeah, I hustle.
You know, at some point we're going to be launching the Charity Charge Awards and,
yes.
you know, I would give you the hustle
so
award.
Sweet.
I mean,
that's
for
sweet.
Sure. But I think there's a lot of what you're saying is true. And it's not, we were talking about kind of systemic, big picture things. How do you make changes? But I hear you. You know, if funds are not allocated properly and are given to organizations where it's not spent well, and it doesn't mean that they're purposely abusing the money or whatever, but there's a lot of,
oh yeah,
whether it's for-profits, nonprofits, social ventures, whatever, there's a lot of bureaucracy and mismanagement of companies and nonprofits.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, where it's just not efficient, you know, and I even see that at our, that's where I try to get better and better, even with our small team at Charity Charge. I'm like, we got to be a well-oiled machine if we're going to make a difference. You know,
yeah.
we can't get caught up in the minutia and stuff. And I could certainly see that if some huge grant was given to a big organization and all they had was meeting after meeting,
that's,
you know, versus you. I mean, you're just making stuff happen.
Oh yeah.
You know,
I was at,
which I love.
I'm a part of a lot of the work in Austin and Courageous Conversation and Leadership Austin Equity Team. And I meet people all the time. And when they hear about what I'm doing, they say, you know, Phyllis, how can I help? What can I do? And I'm like, what do you have access to? And so like Stephen of the Austin Ballet, he says, well, I'm the director at the ballet. I'm like, let's have lunch next week. And the day after that, he's like, however many tickets you want for your families to come to community night to see the arts, you have it.
It's amazing. Yeah. And that's part of my also, I think, the beauty of what you're doing, and for individuals that maybe are listening to this and in the early stages of launching their own mm-hmm. charitable initiative, you know, nonprofit foundation, or thinking of getting one going, I always think that that's where the opportunity is to be a lot more hustle, practical, boots on the ground. I mean, and you can find people out there that really want to get behind it and support it. Like you just articulated. I mean, that was a one-to-one conversation you had with, you know, someone in a leadership role at the ballet that said, let's do this. I could see it being a much bigger organization and it going to committee. And I mean, see a lot of stuff. What I need to do is I want to keep going this on. I need to
yes.
pause for a second.
Yep.
And then we're going to pick right back up. Hang on. We're going to take a quick transition here to get into even more that was kind of captured as I was continuing to talk with Phyllis. And let's just roll right into it right now. Thanks.
I think I talked about everything.
No, you're perfect. Well, the ballet is great. Well, what I want to focus on now as we kind of round this out, Phyllis, mm-hmm. is what are the ways that anyone could help, whether it's an individual, whether it's financial support, it's in-kind support, it's connections to restaurants or other people. Like, yeah. What are you looking for? If you could ask the world right now for people that are listening that say, this is unbelievable what you're doing, whether they're across the country or they're right here in our backyard in Austin and want to make a difference, how can they help you?
My biggest thing I would probably be marketing. Marketing is the biggest tool. So funding for marketing or either a marketing company that could really take Saffron Trust or give Saffron Trust more visibility. Mm-hmm. Because once you get visibility, the arms are there, mm-hmm. the hands are out. People are generally very good and have a good heart. They just don't know about it. And so I just need to make visible to people what is going on. And once they do, once they're aware of what's going on, people just generally just help in the support in any way they can. I have had nothing but generosity, and I've only been in business a year. People will come up to me and say, "Oh my God, how did you do so much? You know, do this." And I'm like, the people, the community.
It's true, but I also want to acknowledge for people listening along, it wasn't just baked in a year. You know, I mean, this has been something that you faced head on, decades ago. Yeah. And through all of that experience and perseverance, you're able now to be in a situation to give back. And that's part of what, I share with a lot of the people that reach out to me that are interested in starting a nonprofit or, mm-hmm. Their own social venture, mm-hmm. Is that it's oftentimes the lessons and the challenges that you face that you go to is how you kind of, I don't want to say have a leg up, but can get something going pretty quickly.
Yes.
Because you haven't been at this for a year.
No, not a whole life. Oh no,
you know?
A lifetime.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And people only, there's a great quote by Tony Robbins of you're rewarded in public for what you practice in private. Right. Mm. And so I think about that a lot of all the years that it took for me to figure out the ins and outs of the credit card industry to get the Charity Charge going, which we've been in market for almost 4 years now, but it was 2 or 3 years before that where I was like bumbling around trying to figure out how to start a credit card company and only more recently have things really been picking up and our impact's been, it's really been awesome to be a part of, but it's because it was years and years and years of all the hard work that, was done in private, and the same for you.
Yes.
So for anyone also, following along, we'll put it in the show notes. I want to let you know that Phyllis's website for Saffron Trust is saffrontrust.org. That's with two F's. So SAFFRON trust.org. Any other ways that people can get in touch with you if they're listening to this and want to get involved outside of the website?
Just saffrontrust.org. I have a lot of I've launched a lot of programs, so any of my programs on Betty Unite, just type in Phyllis Everett, Saffron Trust, everything will come up.
That's wonderful.
Yeah, it's pretty easy.
I really, first of all, thank you so much for being a friend of mine, friend of Charity Charge. Thank you for what you're doing. It's really moving. I'm really speechless. Wow. So thank you so much for coming on. And I'm so happy we got this opportunity to be face-to-face and start what I hope will become a really wonderful friendship between
me
us.
Me too. Thank you.
And for everyone listening along, thank you again for checking out these episodes. As you have any feedback at all for the podcast or want to nominate a nonprofit, you can also just reach out to me directly. My name is spelled with a PH. So it's Stephen, STEPHEN @charitycharge.com. Thanks a lot.